That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
This episode of The Price of Football is brought to you by Beer 52, the world's largest beer club. Every month, its 170,000 plus members get a case of beer delivered to their door, each time with a different theme.
Can you imagine the fun that I would have with 170,000 people in a spreadsheet and all the different beers that they've received? I would be in spreadsheet heaven. And I understand that the past themes include Belgium, California, North and South Korea, and they're adding new themes all the time. And you can also choose to have just light beers in your box if you're not into the darker stuff. And each delivery comes with a magazine and a snack.
Oh, I'd love a magazine with my beer. If you'd like to see what they've got to offer, go to beer52.com/POF or use the code POF at beer52.com to get a free case of 8 unique craft beers. All you have to do is cover the postage costs of £5.95. After your first free case, the cost per month is just £24, and you can pause or cancel your monthly order at any time. Trust me, you won't want to do that.
Yes, gang, all you've got to do is go to beer52.com/POF or use the code POF at beer52.com to claim your case of 8 unique craft beers from our good chums at Beer 52 now.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Reading University's for half a term, Kevin Day, and him, Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. I mention that, Kieran, because I'm worried that people may think I'm an intellectual hobbit if I don't occasionally put my own credentials in there compared to you. Later, we'll be hearing from MP and Spurs fan Tracy Crouch about her fan-led review into football governance. Kieran gets mentioned a lot. Tracy and Kieran sitting in a tree. Doesn't bother me at all, Kieran, that I wasn't asked to take part in the fan-led review. Not a problem that you were asked and I wasn't. It hasn't even occurred to me that it was even happening. Before that, some news stories to get into. But before that, Kieran, how was your walking football? I was impressed to hear that you're off to play walking football. Please tell me that you drove to walking football.
I cycled, Kevin. I tried to be as green as I can. You know, I've actually spent the afternoon before the walking football at the Theatre of Quinoa itself, recording some TikTok style videos for another show. So it's been a busy day.
You'll be pleased to hear, Kieran. As you know, my dad's not been very well, and he had to have a massive iron infusion yesterday, which has really, really helped him. Thank you, NHS. In particular, Sarah and Mitzi, his nurses, who he now knows all about after an hour. But they recommended quinoa. They said quinoa is one of the best foods for getting iron into him. So I made him some quinoa last night, and he took one spoonful and said, "Don't like it." That was it. So I was really quite proud of his incipient dislike of quinoa. But yeah, walking football, I'm impressed, Kieran. Do you have walking referees as well?
Yes, you do. Yeah, having watched Brighton play tippy-tappy football between our back four and not move for the past 3 years, I feel I'm in a strong position to play well at it.
What position do you play, Kieran?
I'll play left side of the defence.
Oh, the defence. Oh, that's right. I thought you'd be in midfield. You know, they all say the first yard is in the head, even in walking football, don't they? Now, this is an interesting news story, Kieran, and fans of other clubs will relate to it. Southampton are going to give every fan who went to Sunday's game against Manchester United a full refund.
Yes, this is on the back of problems in terms of when the match started. There were many fans locked out, and it all boils down to the use of technology, which is replacing our standard season cards at many clubs. And that's fine, provided it works. Now, the football clubs are very keen to get the government on board and say, you know, we are observing appropriate protocols in respect of COVID. So therefore, you know, they're asking for evidence of vaccinations. They're looking for evidence of a negative COVID test result and so on, which means that there's an extra layer of scrutiny that is required. But it didn't work very well at Southampton. I've seen the photographs from other grounds as well. I think there were issues at Anfield, and whether this is something that we as fans need to acclimatize ourselves to, or whether it is just teething problems. But if it is the latter, the clubs have had a fair amount of time to get around the use of the new technology. I've noticed that Everton are now saying, I think, that if you pay a fiver, you can have a card instead of one of these e-based or i-based systems for those people that either don't feel comfortable object on former principle to more technology. So, shambolic in places, and that's not a good way to welcome fans back to the start of the season, because the Southampton-Manchester United match was a very good game of football, especially in the first half.
Yeah, so even people that were in the ground in good time are going to get a full refund for their ticket.
That would appear to be the case. Now, how that would work is curious, because you would have thought that given they've got the technology, they should have been able to identify who was in the ground before it kicked off. I think away fans have had problems as well with regards to ticketing. How things are going to go forward this season, if you are an away fan, are you expected to load another football club system onto your phone, or is the intention for it to operate smoothly via Apple Wallet or Google Wallet? We're not sure. And what happens if you wake up the morning of the match and you are ill? Under normal circumstances, you could just say to your mate, here's, take my card. Can that work? Can that not work? There's a lot of unanswered questions.
Yeah, there were teething problems, I think is the word, at Selhurst Park on Saturdays, particularly at one end, although the club announced that everybody was in the ground by 3:05, which I think is probably true, although that's not much consolation if you were queuing up at 1:30. But what intrigues me is that several clubs seem to have gone to this e-ticket system very, very quickly, much quicker than they announced originally, because even 3 weeks ago when I was asking about my season ticket, they said, no, don't worry, the new one's in the post. And it was very much, it'll be the same season ticket card system as before. And I only needed the new one because I'd managed to put my old one through the washing machine. Everybody else was using their old one.
Right.
And yet suddenly, 10 days before the season started, they went, no, we're not using season ticket cards. We're issuing e-tickets. And also they're doing it on a match-by-match basis. They haven't issued season tickets electronically. They issued season ticket holders with tickets for the Brentford game. They're going to issue them with separate tickets for the Tottenham game. And I'm assuming that's a kind of defence against any possible shutdown of football again that might help in terms of revenue. Otherwise, I can't understand why they can't issue season tickets as normal. It certainly happened very quickly. And then, in that one end in particular, there were huge problems. Not as big a problem, I have to say, as the 23,000 plastic non-biodegradable flags that were put on the seats, which must be damaging the environment quite tremendously, I have to say, and also became a trip hazard. But, you can't put in the stand where we sit, you can't put 500 semi-drunk blokes in a place with plastic flags and not expect trouble to ensue and then not expect them to trip over. But I'd be interested to hear from fans of other clubs what they are doing in terms of, because that it seems that the reason they're having these issues is that they're doing it very quickly. Although I still don't understand, Kieran, why it should be so much more difficult. I printed my ticket off. Why is it so much more difficult to put that barcode through a reader than it is to put our old season ticket holder through a reader? I'm not sure why there's so many teething problems, but we will. What do they do at Brighton, by the way?
They've gone completely e-approach, although it was we were practically there anyway. Because it's a relatively new stadium, it was sort of future-proof to an extent. And tickets are being given out on an individual match basis. How things are going to pan out, and it was okay on Saturday at the Amex. Okay is not the same as brilliant. Some people were getting frustrated. To be fair to the staff were absolutely fantastic, very helpful, and some people ended up having to get a standard ticket from the ticket office. So at this stage of the season, we're in August, the weather's warm, it's okay. If we are now expected to arrive in November and December, an hour and a half before the match kicks off, and it's been switched by the TV authorities to a Friday night or Sunday at midday, it goes back to my view is that if I book a restaurant for 7 o'clock on a Saturday night, and they phone me up and say, "Oh, sorry, we're moving it. Yeah. And we're moving it to Friday night." I say, "Oh, well, I can't make Friday night." And then they say, "We're still going to charge you."
Yeah,
I wouldn't be a customer of that restaurant for too long. And I do think that this is an ongoing issue where clubs are taking fans' loyalty and love for the club for granted because they know that we will just grin our teeth and put up with it.
Yeah, although to be fair, Kieran, it's not difficult to entice Brighton fans to get to a game early. You just have a craft fair in the car park and they'll be there. They'll be there by 11. That'd be nice. And as soon as
if it's a craft fair of Beer 52, /POF, using the code POF, I can understand them getting there early.
Well, you really have got a corporate commercial brain in there somewhere, Kieran, haven't you? Beneath that socialist facade. Now, players of the video game Football Manager won't be able to manage Manchester United anymore.
Yes, a satisfactory resolution of a dispute between Sega, who are the ultimate owners of Football Manager, and Manchester United has been reached. So you will now be able to play Manchester UFC, but not Manchester United. And this all boils around the use of the name Manchester United. And it's an intriguing one because does that mean that, do we owe royalties to Manchester United if we mention them in a story? If you're a newspaper and you're reporting on them, I can understand defending intellectual property in terms of the club's badge and the crest. That's perfectly understandable, and you would normally expect to pay some form of licensing fee. But the use of the name does seem a bit harsh. Although I do remember a few years ago when Juventus gave exclusive rights, I think it was to Konami for Pro Evolution Soccer, that Football Manager ended up calling them Zebre as an alternative. It's an awkward one. And, clearly our silver-tongued friends are the only winners in all of this. It used to be that you were able to change and edit within some of these games. And I don't know whether this is still the case because the Baroness has said that if I do buy Football Manager again, she's divorcing me. I spend enough time on spreadsheet-related football nonsense as it is. It used to be that you were able to edit the name. So even if they did give, if they call it, Manchester or, Manchester U, if people were allowed to edit that allowed them to put in the full names. So whether that has been part of the settlement as well, I'm not certain.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, Kieran. I lost interest in football games a long time ago. If you can't flick to kick, I'm out, basically. I also lost interest in Sputo as well when someone, well-meaning, bought me floodlights for Christmas. It's like, what's the point of that?
And they used to take the big batteries as well, didn't they?
They did take the big battery as well. It's like, you know, the support of the Scout. Somebody there, you could buy a Scout in Subutio. It's like, your house is too big if you've got floodlights and Scouts in your Subutio pitch. two stories from Scotland, Kieran. One more angsty than the other. Rangers have won a court case, which means that a Scottish FA arbitration case won't now go ahead.
Yes, this is all to do with Rangers' ongoing dispute with the SPFL, and they've made a few snarky comments. They said that, you know, if those in charge of football in Scotland were more consensual and less confrontational, then this dispute could have been resolved earlier. I think it is
antagonistic
very much
as well, Kieran, wasn't it? They accused the SPFL of being deliberately antagonistic towards Rangers Football Club.
And you know, the people in charge of the game have a duty to the game as a whole. And I do think that sometimes fans think that they are being picked on, which isn't necessarily the case. I'm not the biggest fan of some football authorities, but the idea of vendettas, I think, takes it a step too far. So the issue is all to do with the sponsorship deal between Scottish Football and Cinch, the online car retailer. Now, Rangers, one of Rangers' biggest shareholders, Douglas Park, owns a car dealership. He's got an existing relationship between his company and the club. And he says, and he's backed up by his lawyers, that therefore, as his contract takes priority because it was already in place and has quoted various elements of the Scottish Football Constitution. So it will proceed at a glacial pace. And it's a shame because I like Scottish football, and when so much of things appear to be taking place in aggressive tones between parties, and I'm not singling out Rangers here. You know, I've seen it from other clubs as well, and I thought the refusal of Celtic to applaud Rangers when they'd won the championship, it just comes across as small-minded. It doesn't matter what side of the divide you are. You know, ultimately, a football club won a competition by being the best team on the pitch, and you should give recognition for that as a professional. It's a shame because it's looking like being an exciting season in Scottish football, and this is an unnecessary distraction.
Cinch are a relatively new name on the block, Kieran, but they seem to have a lot of money. They're sponsoring the England cricket team. Do they want to become players, or are they taking advantage of a COVID-related market and they can perhaps afford more sponsorship than they would have done a season or two ago? Because they seem to be cropping up in a lot of areas of sponsorship-wise.
Well, they're from the same stable as We Buy Any Car.
Right.
So, yeah, We Buy Any Car on sort of on the purchase side of the fence, and Cinch appear to be on the sale side. So they do have some fairly wealthy backers.
Right.
The deal with Scottish Football, I think, is for $8 million over 4 years, and it is the biggest deal. It is the biggest sponsorship deal in the SPFL's history. So, that's a positive. When that's divided between all of the teams, is that a huge amount of money? No, it's not. But it's last year they didn't have a sponsor and they were criticised. This year they do have a sponsor and they're criticised. We are friends with Neil Doncaster, and you've got to have a lot of sympathy for him and his team. Whatever they do is wrong in the eyes of some.
Yeah, I do. In the past, whenever we talk about Scottish football, it's a double-edged sword that we know Neil Doncaster, because that damns us in some people's eyes and helps us in other people's eyes. It does occur to me, much as I like Neil, that somebody should have realised in the negotiations with Cinch that Rangers' biggest sponsor was also a company in the same industry, basically, a competitive industry, and that these negotiations should have been sorted out amicably before the Cinch deal was done, because it seems to come as a surprise to everybody that Rangers have said, understandably, I think, well, hang on a second, you're asking us to promote a rival to the existing sponsors here.
Yes, I can understand that. Although in the past, Scottish football has been sponsored by gambling companies, and 32 Red and other, and Daffabet have been front of shirt sponsors of Scottish football clubs, and that appeared to go through without any issue. I guess the issue here is it's a company which is owned by a significant shareholder in Rangers Football Club.
Mm. Yeah. Lighter news from Scotland. Hearts are set to become the largest fan-owned club in the UK.
Yes, I think this is fantastic news. Mm. The significant shareholder Anne Budge is selling her shares to the Hearts Foundation. I think it's great that a club in the top tier of football can be fan-owned. They've already got Motherwell as well. I think it gives hope and something to, sort of inspiration for other clubs or other fan groups who want to progress their clubs. I think also we've said, this side of the border, it is more of a challenge for clubs in England to be fan owned because of the huge losses to be incurred in the Championship. Although, if there is better distribution of money in English football, then perhaps those losses those losses issues can be addressed, and we could have a fan owned club be able to go through the divisions without the sheer terror of going to going to the Championship and the potential losses to be incurred there.
Are the fans groups buying these shares in the face of competition from other people, or was it always the plan that Anne Budge would offer the fans groups the shares first?
No, I think they certainly had first dibs. Right. Anne Budge always wanted to effectively hand over the reins, and I think it's great news for Hearts as a football club.
It is, yeah, and obviously, again, we've got Tracy Crouch today, we've got Rochdale next week, but if somebody from the groups that are buying the shares in Hearts would like to get in touch, we'd love to talk to you about this because it's a good news story and we always love to highlight good news stories. Our final story today, Kieran, before that interview with Tracy Crouch, which of course deals a lot with the distribution of money in the English football. UEFA's new FFP rules will allow them to monitor squad spending and wages in real time.
Yes, FFP is dead, long live FFP appears to be the mantra coming out from UEFA. So initially they said, well, the aim of FFP was to reduce debt, and then somebody tapped them on the shoulder and said, you do realise that Manchester City and PSG have zero debt because they're funded by the owners through shares. So that was quickly changed. We've now been through the present iteration of financial fair play, which is backward looking, i.e. it's linked to the losses made over the last 3 years by a club, and they can't exceed €30 million. And that has proven to be difficult to police, but also by the time you do get round to charging a club, as has been seen, clubs have gone on and they've won trophies. So a retrospective approach seems to not work. So the latest proposals are going to be effectively a wages cap, a soft wages cap, so it will be linked to revenues. And if you exceed the wage cap, then you pay a super tax, and it could be between 100% to 200%. So let's say that you've got a wage cap which is 70% of your revenue. For every euro you spend above that, you have to give an extra euro to UEFA, who then distribute it amongst the rest of the clubs. But it looks as if UEFA will be demanding access to wages payments by clubs. My first thought was, well, I can probably work a way around this, and I don't like thinking like that, but if I'm thinking like that, what would I do? I would say, well, I'll pay the players' wages so that we are within the limit, and if the players want a bit more, I'll give them some form of personal sponsorship. from a friendly company, and yeah, that circumvents the rules. So there are ways around this. The downside of if you're going to say a 70% or a 65% or whatever it's going to be, wages to revenue, is that it locks in the existing significant gaps between the very rich and the not so rich.
See, that just indicates the difference between your sinister, wicked heart, Kieran, and my gentle, my gentle, innocent spirit. Because my first thought was, this seems like quite a good idea. I was just getting used to the idea that UEFA may have come up with quite a good scheme. And immediately, as soon as you said that, you go, no, oh, well. Now, Kieran, recently, MP and ex-sports minister Tracy Crouch conducted a fan-led review into all aspects of football governance. The full report is due in the autumn, but many of her proposals were outlined in an interim letter to Culture, Media and Sport Minister Oliver Dowden. And we spoke to Tracy about some of the headlines from that letter. Tracy, thank you so much for joining us. I don't know if you're a fan of the hard-hitting panorama-style cut-and-thrust interview, but if you are, this ain't it. I'm afraid. On Panorama, they don't tend to preface their questions with "You're brilliant," but can I get a couple of admin questions out of the way first, Tracy, before we talk about the meat of the review or the suggestions you're making off the back of the review? Tell us about the process for choosing the people you wanted to speak to in this review. I mean, obviously, politicians all have Kieran's number on speed dial, but how did you go about deciding who you wanted to talk to?
Well, first and foremost, we wanted to talk to as many fans and fan groups as possible. And I'm pretty sure that we covered off almost every fan group across the entire pyramid and beyond. And of course, you know, fans were able to get involved with the survey as well. So, you know, hopefully we managed to speak to everybody who wanted to contribute to the review in that sense. But then, of course, we also needed to talk to various experts within the field of football itself, and Kieran was one of those experts that we spoke to, and that included those that are involved in running the leagues, that or the FA or the National League, and grassroots. So, you know, we had a very long list of people that we wanted to talk to. I mean, it was pretty insane. We had well over 100 hours of engagement with various people, various groups. And on some days, you know, we sort of kind of get to the end of the day and the panel being on since 9 o'clock in the morning on non-stop Zooms. And you're just like, oh, my goodness me, my head is just going nuts. And all this is happening with the Euros going on in the background. So, you know, it was mad.
Yeah, I feel the same way after 40 minutes with Kieran, so I do. Tracy, a review was promised in the Tory party manifesto at the last general election, so it was always going to happen.
Yep.
But was it always going to happen now, or was it brought forward by the threat of the European Super League?
So I think actually there's two different answers to that question. Sorry to be a politician on this, but the review was in the manifesto. I was sort of kind of quite key in getting that manifesto commitment in because of what had happened with Bury and then subsequently, you know, Wigan and Macclesfield and so on. COVID actually delayed the review.
Right.
So I can't say whether or not it would have definitely happened within the first, you know, 18 months, 2 years of the new administration. But I can certainly say the reason why it didn't happen is because of coronavirus and the pandemic. And quite understandably, right, you've got the government dealing with other issues and also football dealing with the COVID crisis itself. And I think to be fair to the Secretary of State, Oliver Dowden, he was keen to ensure that football was focused on sort of the issues around COVID and the work that football was doing in the community, getting fans back in and so on. But then the ESL effectively triggered the review. There was no more being nice anymore. There was no more kind of, you know, let football focus on what it needs to be doing to survive. It was like, okay, you had Project Big Picture in the middle of the COVID crisis. Now you've got the ESL. Now it's time to get on with it.
And for our listeners all over the world, just to clarify, Tracy, this is a review of English football alone, wasn't it?
It is a review of English football, yeah.
Yeah. Before we get into...
Although I should say we have actually, as part of the evidence session, you know, we have looked at what's happening elsewhere in the world, and particularly, you know, you can't help but notice that, you know, there are Italian clubs or in financial difficulty and, you know, going bust, or, you know, the Spanish clubs, or and we took evidence from German supporter groups. So, yes, it is about English football, but we have looked at other football leagues across the world.
Before we get into specifics, Tracy, you spoke, as you say, to people across the game. Was there one theme more than any other that seemed to worry them all or unite them all?
Yes, there was a few. I guess the first thing is that how important their football club is to them and to their community. And I think it was actually COVID made it more important to them. The fact that fans have been denied the opportunity to go and, you know, cheer or jeer their local football club for, you know, a long time, I think has made it more important to them. So that was certainly a theme that came through. The heritage aspects of their club, you know, what is important to them in their football team. And actually things like the badge and the stadium were way more important than, you know, the star striker. Yeah, you know, that who like the owners come and go, whereas some of the heritage aspects of their football club really shone through, I guess just a desire for it to for you know a Bury. I'm sorry to keep on referring to Bury because I kind of feel that it's sad for all the Bury fans that are listening, yeah. But you know, no one wants a Bury to happen to their club, and I think that. You know, it was really it was really harsh for those fans, and people were really absolutely united in wanting something to set a safety net for football in the future.
Yeah, the first story we covered when we started this pod was the imminent demise of Bury, and I don't think either of us believed that demise would happen. So it's something we almost took personally as well. It was awful to watch it happen. I'm really pleased to hear you say that. The one link was the heritage thing, because for me, nicknames, kits and badges is what I love most about football, to be perfectly honest. You're making your final report in the autumn, Tracy, but you've written to Culture Secretary Oliver Dowden already outlining a series of measures, one of which is an independent regulator, which will address financial issues, corporate governorship, ownership, etc. Would that independent regulator have a range of sanctions and penalties to give them real authority and teeth?
Well, absolutely needs to. You can't have a regulator without it. Otherwise, it's just, it's a kind of licensing regime. So yes, is the answer to that. And these are the details that we're working through now before the final report is published in the autumn, which is looking like towards the end of October. Exactly what those sanctions are, what enforcement powers are. One of the things I'm really keen on in terms of sanctions is that, you know, I've hated seeing fans being punished in the past, because of the bad decisions of owners. For example, you know, huge points deductions, and you just sit there and think, how is that fair on the fan who suddenly see their team, you know, either relegated or, you know, starting in a negative position at the start of the following season because of something that an owner did. So, I mean, it has to be there, but, you know, I'd like to see a more kind of step-by-step process where other very serious sanctions can be put in place on the owners and the directors before you get to the point where you're punishing fans.
This is it's one of those interviews, Tracy. I wish you could see Kieran and I, because we're just nodding vigorously at everything you say. Just going, yes, that's right. This doesn't always happen in our interviews. It's something that Kieran is very keen on, or bangs on about, according to listeners' point of view, is investigating parachute payments. What's your view on parachute payments, Tracy?
I started off the process sort of kind of really quite neutral on parachute payments, but I have come to the conclusion from the evidence that we received, including from Kieran, that they do distort competition, and that there is a sort of unfairness in them, but also that it leads to unsustainable business decisions from others who are trying to compete with those who have received parachute payments. And you know, and so actually, you know, I do think that there is merit in a fundamental review of the system of parachute payments or them being scrapped entirely. Now, the problem is if you do that, if you make that decision, you then have to put in place something else.
Yeah.
And what is not clear yet is what is that something else? And I think when Kieran gave evidence, he talked about a smoothing process. And I think that's right. You know, I learned about smoothing when I was working for Norwich Union and learning all about their with-profits policies and things like that, you know, which feels like, well, it was 15 years ago. And it was sort of Kieran's evidence sort of kind of unlocked this, you know, painful day or two that I had learning about pension smoothing. But I do think, you know, it was right. It's the right thing. We need to work out how we can put something else in place that means you don't suddenly see clubs who get relegated from the Premier League suddenly, you know, completely go bust. And I think that's the challenge there. And then there are different vested interests within that challenge. Like, so if you start putting, for example, you know, mandatory relegation clauses in to contracts, is that something that the PFA start to, you know, go against? If you put wage caps or turnover caps in at leagues for spending, is that something, again, that the PFA or other vested interests start complaining about? And so it's really difficult sort of, you know, issue to solve in that respect.
I'm contractually obliged to bring Kieran in at least once on every interview we do, and I can hear him preening himself in the background because of your kind words. But Kieran, what you've always said about parachute payments, at the risk of repeating us, is they shouldn't be needed if there wasn't such a huge gulf between the Premier League and the Championship, and then between the Championship and League One. You wouldn't need those payments, would you, if there was, as you say, more of a, using the word smooth again, if there was a smoother transition between the divisions?
Absolutely. The research that I've done indicates that when clubs drop from the Premier League to the Championship, the average pay deduction, and this is without mandatory pay cuts, is 40%. And parachute payments help smooth us to get to that 40%. If they were to be abolished altogether, you're then looking at, you know, 80 or 90% pay cuts for players. And, you know, I fully accept that football players are well remunerated in the Premier League. The downside of that is that they still have mortgages. You know, they still have car loans. They still have financial commitments, and to force through an 80% pay cut, and I think that's the severity that we would need, does seem to be quite harsh. So yeah, that's why I've always argued that parachute payments were never intended to create a more equitable Championship. They were there to prevent clubs from going bust, and they've achieved that objective. The secondary issue is that they have caused distortion in the Championship, although I think it could be argued that they helped to preserve the integrity of the Premier League, because, you know, you've got players such as Wilfried Zaha, who's on a very lucrative contract, and you're able to go and rebuff offers from other clubs because he's not having to take an 80% pay cut if the worst happened.
Yeah, the way he played on Saturday, I don't think many of those offers are going to be rebuffed if they come in this week. Tracy, we would be here for hours if we spoke about everything in the report that I wanted to speak about. So I just want to pick one or two things that really stood out to me. I loved your call in particular for a joined-up approach from football to improve player welfare, especially for young players released from the academy system. But would that also include older players when they retire? Because on this pod, we've heard so many stories of bankruptcy, depression, and even suicide. This episode of The Price of Football is brought to you by the AI-powered workspace Notion. We are living in an era of information overload, and we have more knowledge than ever before. But what do we do with it all? If you're in Notion, you put that knowledge to work.
It's a workspace designed not just for making progress, but getting inspired. And all I can say on a personal level is, for somebody whose life is quite chaotic, and I'm writing pieces for government and newspapers and media content, I've got my university commitments and I'm supposed to be writing a book, I use Notion all the time because it brings order into chaos.
Well, if you need order brought to your chaos, you can try Notion for free when you go to notion.com/priceoffootball. That's all lowercase letters, notion.com/priceoffootball, and start turning your ideas into action. That's notion.com/priceoffootball.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Look, I mean, I get really cross with the PFA. I should say the old PFA, because obviously there's a new regime, so it'd be unfair to be cross with them before they've got their feet under the table. because, you know, it has the potential of being one of the largest and best trade union movements in industry. And it, in my view, it hasn't represented players, either young or old, particularly well, despite the fact that everyone contributes to the membership. And I just think that, you know, this is an area that definitely needs reform. It's not necessarily for this review to sort of say that, but personally, I've always been incredibly frustrated with both ends of the football player's career. I've seen some of the outcomes, really quite devastating outcomes of those who go into the academy system, starting incredibly young, give up on their friends and, you know, have limited education and then get kicked out because, I mean, Kieran would be able to give the precise percentage, but I think it's like less than 2% of players in academies make it into the Premier League. So they all think, you know, at the age of eight, they're going to be the next Harry Kane. And actually, you know, they're not. They're, you know, Harry Payne working for a glazing company. That for me is devastating, that they don't have that support. They're not having the education. They're not having financial awareness programs. They're not being told about pensions. They're not sort of kind of getting any of that. And then at the other end, you know, where's the representation? It's taken a long time for the issue of dementia to get onto the onto the agenda. It's there now, but it's taken a while to get there. Post-career, you know, in many ways, being a professional footballer is like being in any other institution, like the army, for example. And, you know, the army have proper exit strategies now for those who serve. So when they go back into Civvy Street, they are supported. UK Sport, during my time as sports minister, worked with the army to see how they can support elite athletes exiting their programs back into communities. Football needs to do the same thing. Again, not everyone's going to be Gary Neville, right? Not everyone is going to finish their career and start, you know, running their own football club. So I think that it just needs to be done better. And I know that a lot of people don't have any sympathy for footballers because, as you say, they have eye-watering salaries and everything else. But I do, you know, because they may have those eye-watering salaries, but for a very, very small percentage of their life.
Yeah, and also an eye-watering salary doesn't protect you from a broken leg or depression either, as people think. Exactly.
You know, depression is, it shows no prejudice. Doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. You know, the fact is that, you know, it's about circumstance. And if you're suddenly in an institution where, you know, you're being told what to eat, you're being told when to sleep, you're being told when to exercise and how to exercise, and all of a sudden you're not doing that anymore, you know, I can completely understand why players feel lost.
Yeah. I'm also slightly distracted now by the thought that everyone becomes Gary Neville. Imagine millions of Gary Nevilles. Terrible. Now, Tracy, I know gambling is an issue that's very important to you. And just this week we saw a report saying that the poorer an area is, the more betting shops there will be in it. Is a levy on the football betting industry to help football itself something you would consider?
Well, so there's a parallel to my review. There's a review being undertaken by DCMS into gambling. And part of that is looking at the relationship between gambling and football. We were quite struck by how often gambling came up completely unprompted by fans and the relationship with it. I've tried since, you know, resigning over gambling, I've tried really hard to not make public comment about gambling issues, live gambling issues, because it's not fair. You know, there's nothing worse than an ex-minister sort of kind of there picking away at policy.
Yeah.
And especially as this review is underway. But, you know, we did put a recommendation in the interim report saying that the gambling review team should meet with football fans to discuss the issue of the relationship. You know, we had, again, completely unprompted, you know, people saying, I won't wear the shirt because it's got a gambling company on the front of it, and I refuse to be an advert walking around town for that gambling company. And I was quite struck by that.
Yes, and so we spoke to a Stoke City fan a couple of weeks ago who was telling us about, you know, that they're making shirts available without the sponsor on Bet365. And they're walking out the shops because most fans would rather wear a plain shirt without a sponsor on it, even if it's a gambling company or not.
Well, that's really interesting, isn't it? Because actually, Bet365 do come in for a lot of criticism, a lot of jet. But actually, that is a really responsible thing to do.
Mm. Yeah, just for those listeners around the world, Tracy, you don't know much about British politics. Perhaps you could remind you resigned over the issue of fixed odds betting terminals in shops, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. You said as well, and I'm going to quote you on this because I love this quote, Tracy. You said that, and this is the quote, football clubs are not ordinary businesses. They play a critical social, civic and cultural role in their local communities. They need to be protected sometimes from their owners. If I was younger, I'd have that tattooed on my arm.
There's still time.
Maybe there is. Midlife crisis. Maybe don't use that as an excuse.
Tattooists are great. They'll stretch out any bingo wings that you have. And, you know, it's like...
How dare you? How dare you, young lady? The sometimes from the owners bit is what fascinates me. I couldn't agree more with what you said. And basically, that's the price of football mantra, everything you just said there. But how do you sell that argument to the more, shall we say, economically laissez-faire politicians in your party who think that all businesses are the same and should stand or fall simply on profit or loss?
Well, the first thing to say is I think that's a traditional view of, you know, what my party thinks.
I did say some. The more economically laissez-faire. I did say that.
I think that there is it's been really interesting that actually there hasn't been much criticism from the right, if you like, about this potential intervention into business, in part because actually almost every area of industry is now regulated. So why should football not be any different? Hmm. And the other thing is we're not trying to stop business or commercial investment into football. In fact, quite the opposite. Trying to do is make sure that it's responsible and sustainable investment into football. And if you can get that by putting around, you know, certain criteria in license conditions for football clubs, then you won't see the tragic consequences in certain communities of a football club completely going. And I think that's really important. And I think politicians, you know, of all parties really realise how important football clubs are within their communities. You know, right from the non-league clubs that, you know, get, I don't know, anywhere from 50 to 500 people going through their gates through to the Premier League clubs. And the important thing about this review is it's not just about Premier League football. It's about the whole pyramid, and it's about what we can do to ensure that football within its community is protected. And there are lots of different reasons and ways of doing that.
I think protected sometimes from their owners is at the heart of everything that Price of Football tries to do, and it's at the heart of everything football fans talk to us. The one thing all fans want from football, from your review or from football in general, is a proper fit and proper person's test. It's a way of preventing chances, wrong-uns, whatever you want to call them, people who don't know their game, who still think that it's a cheap way of making money. That seems to me to be at the heart of everything that football needs to do in future to protect clubs and to make sure that Bury doesn't happen again.
Yeah, and in the past, the subjectivity issue has been a real challenge, I think. And, Ofcom, I think, have just brought a subjectivity issue in terms of, you know, ownership of media outlets. And so, you know, it is certainly something that we can look at. I think it's very difficult. And bear in mind, I still have to remember I am a politician in a governing party. Mm. I think it's very difficult for rules and regulations to be set for an industry and who can be involved in that industry when we as government of any colour are still involved with the countries, for example, you know, of those potential owners in trade terms. You know?
Yes, of course.
So, you know, I sit there and I think, you know, we can't exactly get all high moral ground, moral high ground on, you know, China or Saudi Arabia or the UAE or something, when we're still selling, you know, arms to Saudi. We're not intervening on human rights issues in China. You know, we sort of kind of, we'll still go to Qatar, you know, and things. So you can't have one rule for one and not for the other, if that makes sense.
It does. And you are going to get a lot of tweets from Newcastle United fans.
I've already got, like, you know, lots of tweets from Newcastle fans. But, you know, for me, you know, government isn't the place to be sort of kind of intervening on these issues. Mm. And, you know, because we do still have a trade relationship with Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I as sports minister, the then Prime Minister, Theresa May, sent me to Saudi Arabia. I didn't want to go. I tried everything not to go, including pretending that my passport was out of date. But annoyingly, my super efficient private office got me another passport. In order to encourage the regime's sort of kind of desire to get more women and girls involved in sport. And actually, you know, it was a really interesting trip. And I played football with some girls.
Hmm.
And, you know, I can't imagine doing that 10 years ago. Mm. I was deeply uncomfortable with the whole experience, but, you know, I think it was an important thing to do. But I just don't, you know, we just have to be careful sometimes about being hypocritical about certain things.
You made that sound like an episode of Yes Minister. I've lost my passport. Yeah, your passport's here, Minister. Don't worry.
Yeah, it was a bit like that.
that's really interesting. I mean, because again, women in football is something that's really interesting to hear that you were able to play with women in Saudi Arabia. That's encouraging. Tracy, I'm aware that we have time constraints. There's just one or two more things I'd like to put to you. One of my favourite, in fact, probably my absolute favourite of your recommendations, strikes me as also being the most optimistic in terms of getting it through, which is this idea that fans should have a veto to be able to prevent a new owner from changing a badge or a kit colour or a nickname or a motto. That's how likely would that be to happen, do you think?
Yeah, I think, I mean, to be honest with you, I'm optimistic about all of it.
So. Good.
To be honest, but in terms of the protection of heritage assets, I think it's really important. And I think this kind of golden share option is something that people really would desire. I think also, by the way, I think it's a really good way of shaking up some of the fan supporter groups as well. I have a great deal of time and respect for fan supporter groups, but not everybody is a member of one. You know, I'm a season ticket holder of Spurs and I'm not a member of the Supporters Trust. But if all of a sudden, you know, by being a member, you get a vote on something, you get a say on certain issues, if in the event, you know, that issue was to come to the fore, then I think it's a really good way of democratizing the supporters trusts or fan groups across the country. So that's, you know, I think there's two different parts to it. Fans get a say that protects them and the things that matter to them. But also we have a really healthy democratic supporters kind of movement as well.
Well, talking of supporters, your interim proposals have been very welcomed by the Football Supporters Association, the Fair Game Group, and to be fair, the Premier League and EFL, especially the arguments around a fairer distribution of money. But when most of that money, Tracy, is in the hands of four or five privately owned clubs, aren't they going to take a lot of persuading that money needs to be distributed more fairly?
I think it depends on what you're talking, which money you're talking about, because, you know, the... I mean, I was really struck again by the consensus between the Premier League, not the Premier League clubs, the Premier League, and the EFL about the distribution of funding. I thought that the EFL proposals around better distribution would be something that the Premier League were really quite hostile to. Premier League sort of kind of, and I paraphrase, but the Premier's approach is pretty much of you do whatever you want with it. And that was really that was quite interesting, because I am quite protective in some respects of the Premier League. The Premier League is the best league in the world. It is one of our greatest exports in this country. I'm not saying that everything they do therefore is right, but I also wouldn't want to do anything that damaged the Premier League. And I don't think I've recommended anything that will sort of kind of upset the brand, if you like, even in terms of a regulator, you know, because as I say, I think the regulator is a positive thing for football, not a negative thing. And I think it's a positive thing for investment in football, not a negative thing. Actually, in terms of the distribution, I do think it is something that the Premier League and the EFL can sit down and work out themselves without any kind of regulatory intervention. The one thing I would say is I was slightly disappointed with the continued focus on funding for or priority funding for the Championship, and there seems to be less concern about the funding challenges that happen further down the pyramid. And again, Kieran alluded to it. And you know, obviously, if contractual obligations mean bringing him back in, but the drop between, you know, Championship and League One and Two is, I think, slightly concerning, and deserves more than the 12/8 part of the formula that they currently get. That said, I've also think that we need to remove barriers at lower league clubs for their own financial sustainability purposes. So, for example, it's ludicrous that Sutton have to rip up their 3G pitch, you know, because it brings in a phenomenal amount of money for them. Maidstone United, one of my local clubs, and Chatham Town in my constituency, you know, have artificial pitches. Those pitches are being used 7 days a week, which of course brings money into the club. It's absolutely ridiculous that Sutton now has to rip theirs up. So those are the sort of things that I also think that football can do for itself.
Well, it puts a newly promoted team like Sutton on the back foot, because they have to play their first four games either away or at a different stadium, which strikes me as unfair. I think I can bring Kieran back. I think I can break my own made-up rule and bring Kieran back in a second time. Because, Kieran, the Championship, right from the very start of this podcast, when my eyebrows, I thought, couldn't get any higher, the finances of the Championship, which you described as a basket case, was something that came as a shock to most people. But there's a lack of sympathy for the Championship, because most fans outside of it seem to think that the problems are self-imposed in the Championship, because once a team gets to the Championship, they break the bank to try and get into the Premier League when they assume they'll get that money back. And it's just not the case, is it? I mean, they don't, you know, the one or two teams that, like Rotherham, who do get promoted, then get relegated again, do the sensible thing. But everybody else seems to pile the pressure on themselves financially, don't they?
There is. I think that ultimately, we talk about clubs. The focus surely should be on club owners, because they are the people who set the budgets. And there has been talk from some Championship club owners of, you know, wanting them to have a breakaway or to become Premier League 2, and then, you know, effectively cast Leagues 1 and 2 adrift. So, the Premier League is not the big bad wolf, and neither is the EFL. You know, that they're all trying to represent their clubs and to get the best out for them. But it is it is a tricky issue. And I've got the figures, as everybody knows, going back a long, long time. And it's not coronavirus that's made the championship precarious. I think it's 8 years out of the last nine. Wages have exceeded revenues, and the 1 year that it was below, it was 99% of revenue. So it's poor business practice, which is linked to casino style ownership.
Just two more things, Tracy. As somebody who works in the entertainment industry, and occasionally, Tracy, my work veers into culture, it distresses me that we don't have our own minister. As a sport lover, it distresses me that sport doesn't have its own minister, because between them, those industries generate billions of pounds for this country, which is a sort of lengthy preamble to asking you, how seriously does this government, this prime minister, take football as an industry?
Well, you do have your own minister. Caroline Dynage is the culture minister.
Ministry, then, should we say? Sorry.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, you do. Well, DCMS, Department of Culture, Media and Sport. It has it in the name.
I know. My point is that I think culture's big enough, and sport are big enough to have to not. It kind of distresses a lot of us that we're lumped in, if you like, with other industries that aren't similar.
Oh, well, I'm afraid every department has that issue, and every sector has that issue. Yeah, totally. But the one thing I would say is that in my ideal world, I would restructure DCMS anyway, and I would make it sort of kind of a wellbeing department, because to me, both culture and sport contribute to wellbeing. And we have this sort of kind of slightly weird sort of thing where the Department of Health is financed, its budget is based entirely on us being a poorly nation. And yet there is no department that is focused on us not being a poorly nation. So if you got rid of the digital and the media bit of the Department of Culture, Media and Sport, you could actually have this rather wonderful department where the whole focus is on keeping people well. And I would put culture very much in that, you know, people going off to theatres and galleries and museums and watching a film or whatever is very much about well-being. So that would give you a much better department to sort of kind of champion your cause.
I noticed you were a very good politician there, and you didn't answer the last bit of the question.
It's because I was too busy thinking about the first bit. What was the last bit?
I'll get slightly panorama on you.
About whether or not government takes sport seriously.
Football in particular, because we saw the Prime Minister's comments in and around the European Super League. I'm just interested to know how seriously, as an industry, football is taken by our government.
So I don't think it's taken it very seriously in the past. I think actually things like the ESL crisis have shown that government needs to take more interest. I mean, I and actually other sports ministers, to be fair, have spent a long time, you know, banging heads against the Downing Street brick wall, trying to make the point that, yes, football is made up of a lot of private enterprise, but its importance and its value in society is more than that. And I think finally people are beginning to get it. And I think a combination of the various sort of kind of crises that we've seen in football, plus actually how well much of football did respond to COVID, and the fact that clubs like tiny Chatham Town, you know, were doing in their communities during coronavirus. I think that the combination of all those things, people are finally beginning to get it, that football is actually really important. And it's not just about 90 minutes, you know, at the weekend. It's so much more than that.
You know, a ministry for wellbeing, I would happily be part of that. It's a fantastic idea. It would be a difficult sell to my elderly father, who I've been trying to tell him about mindfulness, and he just won't have it. But
so mindfulness is in the department. I'm a big advocate for mindfulness. And actually, there's some really interesting things about mindfulness in sport. And if you think about Johnny Wilkinson and the way he used to take his penalty kicks, that's exactly what mindfulness in sport is.
That's interesting. Well, I'll try and explain that to my dad, but he thinks football went when goalkeepers started wearing gloves. So
that sounds like my father-in-law.
I remember the moment. Peter Bonetti wearing gloves. Yes, it. There's no point. What's the point anymore?
Yeah, no, but honestly, right. I took my father-in-law to a Maidstone United game when he came to visit for Christmas, and he kept on shouting to the linesman, he kept on saying foul throw, and I was like, "What are you talking about?" He's like, "His foot wasn't behind the line." I was like, "Jerry, that rule went out in like the '80s, mate. You know, it's like seriously."
Tracy, it has been brilliant to talk to you. As I said, we would be here all day if we went into every proposal that you've made initially in detail. But I'm pleased to hear you talk about being optimistic about it. When you make the final report to Oliver Dowden, are you expecting it to be rubber stamped, or does it then become the subject of a debate? What's the timescale for achieving some of the very brilliant things that you've suggested in your initial report?
So that's a good question, and the answer, not that the others finally were good questions. she qualifies quickly. The honest answer is I don't know.
Right.
So we're in a slightly weird situation, which is that obviously I'm a sitting politician doing an independent review for government. And ordinarily, you know, government would make some sort of kind of statement about it or whatever. And I'm not quite sure yet what the actual parliamentary process will be in terms of, you know, the consideration of the report. You know, I'm hoping it won't take long for them to consider the report. I mean, I'm not doing anything that I don't think that my government couldn't implement, put it that way. You know, I'm taking the view that if I were to, at some point in the future, be promoted back into sports minister, I would have to implement this, right? So I'm kind of sitting there thinking, I'm not going to do anything nuts. But in terms of, you know, if legislation is required to set up a regulator, then clearly it takes, you know, a year for that to happen.
Right.
Okay. And I don't, but there are certain things that can happen without legislation.
Right. And also there's nothing, you know, you can't rule out any election at any time. We've calmed down a little bit.
I know. Basically,
we've stopped the election every 6 month process, but there's nothing in this report that an opposition would oppose, surely. I mean, I've given up with the Labour Party. You may know that my politics are not quite the same as yours, Tracy, but at the moment it's a depressing thing to be a Labour supporter. But even Keir Starmer, you'd imagine, wouldn't out of principle oppose anything in this, because I don't think there's any right-minded football fan that wouldn't agree with just about everything that's in this proposal and think that it's necessary, that football needs to change. There's no doubt about that. That's why we're seeing so many fans setting up so many campaigning groups. Football needs to change. This, to Kieran and I in particular, most of the things you say seems to be the way to change it, and I can't imagine many football fans agreeing. So you'd hope, for the love of God, that just out of principle, nobody else in opposition would oppose it.
Well, I hope so. I mean, I've been working actually cross-party anyway, so I've kept, you know, colleagues in the Labour Party up to speed with, you know, what we've been doing in terms of the review. I even had a session with them to hear what they wanted to see in the interim report. So the good thing about football, actually the good thing about sport, is it's politically neutral by and large. I mean, there are certain issues that come up that ignite sort of kind of political differences. But actually, by and large, sport is a fairly neutral issue, and it works well. It means that I have a good relationship with people like Andy Burnham and Jerry Sutcliffe and Richard Caborn and Lord Blunkett, you know, because actually it doesn't matter. The political allegiance matters less than your football allegiance. So, we're more likely to have banter about football than politics.
Yes. Wouldn't it be nice if the world was like that, just in general, that we got more obsessed about football than about politics?
Well, unless, of course, you're an Arsenal fan.
Oh, yeah, fair point. Well, it's taken as read. Arsenal and Brighton, they're not included in any of these reasonable debates, because they're not capable of making reasoned arguments. It just pains me. I hate looking at the league table at the moment. It just really distresses me.
Oh, I don't. Well,
me too.
Tracy, it's been lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much for giving us so much of your time. We wish you all the very best with the progress of the report. As I say, most football fans, 99.9% of them, will welcome it, and we hope that it gets taken on board, and we hope to talk to you in future near the time that happens. So thanks again. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Kieran, I thought Tracy was brilliant, actually, and I'd kind of wish we did have 2 hours in which to go into full detail with every proposal in the letter. It's clear, though, that your evidence was taken very seriously in the fan-led review, Kieran, particularly around parachute payments.
Yes, I want parachute payments to go. But the reason why I want parachutes payments to go is because that there's no need for them, as opposed to just get rid of them. The evidence that I presented was let's change cliffs to slopes, and therefore the necessity for them disappears automatically. But I agree with you that that Tracy's summary in her letter to Oliver Dowden was excellent. I can't understand why the EFL are opposed to an independent regulator, but I'm sure they have their reasons. But you know, the rest of football, and certainly I think football fans have reacted to this positively, because it is non-party political, because it is our national game, and I think some things transcend party politics. And fair play to Tracy and also everybody else that was involved on the fan-led review. I know many clubs had contributions and put huge amounts of work into it, and I think that's all due to our affection and love for the game.
Yeah, you realise you've just congratulated yourself there, Kieran, didn't you?
No.
I know what you're saying. Congratulations to everybody who took part. Implying that those of us who weren't invited to take part or weren't available on the day, possibly I was invited. I haven't checked my emails. You're right about the party political aspect, though. Although it's good to hear a Tory MP so in favour of strong trade unions, and she had some quite stern words for the PFA or the previous PFA. They had some quite stern words about previous governments and their attitude to football, didn't she?
Yes. As far as I'm concerned, Tracy's on the side of the angels. She's a football fan first, and she understands the importance of the game to us as fans, but also the amazing work that clubs and people connected to clubs do for the broader community, which is, I suspect the only reason why this podcast is still going is because we still have this romantic notion that football can be a force for good, and we try to highlight the good and expose the bad.
She's a Tottenham fan, and MPs are meant to be cleverer than us, Kieran. They're meant to be more mature than us, which doesn't take a lot of doing. So it's probably for the best that we'd stopped recording before she started singing "Let's All Laugh at Arsenal," which endeared her even further into every football fan's mind, I think. If you'd like to make a small contribution to our always free-to-air podcast, then thank you, and please go to patreon.com/priceoffootball. If you have any questions for us, for our regular Monday questions pod, then please email questions@priceoffootball.com. And in the meantime, now he's recovered from his walking football exertions and can breathe properly, I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
Thank you for all the feedback, folks. It is appreciated. We do try to improve the show, although we're not quite sure why you like it in the first place.
That's the spirit.
But if you want to support us on Patreon, that's fantastic. But you can also support us by clicking on that follow button on Apple Podcasts, and giving us 5 stars and just saying something. It doesn't have to be nice. It doesn't have to be naughty. But I do read the reviews, and I find myself chuckling at most of them. There are some really smart listeners out there, far smarter than myself and Kevin. But God bless you all, and thank you for all the support.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The Price of Football. the price of football.